come to me, and people gather around. They have all they can bring, and nobody will react. Only when the song sings, the revolution starts now.
You're listening to WRIRLP 97.3 FM in Richmond, Virginia. Good afternoon and welcome to Indie Media Live, one of the most progressive half hours on the radio because we have no corporate sponsorship and no corporate control. We hope you'll stay tuned to hear what a difference this makes in bringing you the news. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm here every Tuesday introducing you to people who are passionately involved in the issues and causes that directly affect you and your family. We hope to encourage you, inspire you, and empower you to become part of the conversation because a democracy thrives only when all voices are heard. We have an especially important show for you today. Richmond is only 44 miles as the crow flies or as the radiation cloud floats from two aging reactors in North Anna in Louisa County. According to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, these are seventh on the list of reactors at risk from earthquake damage out of the 104 reactors in the United States. Paul Gunter of Beyond Nuclear is here with us to help educate us on this madness called nuclear. This show will be aired tomorrow also from 2:30 until 3 o'clock at WRIR.org and archived as well at our blog, indiemedialive.blogspot.com. If you hear anything today that you'd like to find out more about, or you're driving in your car and can't write down all of this event information, not to worry. IndyMediaLive.blogspot.com, I-N-D-Y, MediaLive.blogspot.com. First, I have a couple of event announcements for you. There will be another peaceful anti-fur protest sponsored by RichmondFriendsOfAnimals.org this Saturday, March the 26th, from 12 p.m. until 1:30 p.m. at 1515 North Parham Road here in Richmond. Millions of animals each year die for the vanity of fur. If you'd like to find out more about this event, RichmondFriendsOfAnimals.org, and a little birdie told me that there are also going to be vegan cupcakes there. I want to tell you about something that's happening tonight. This event is happening Tuesday, March the 22nd, this evening, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. It is a forum on the Affordable Health Care Law, a year old and a century in the making. Joanne Grossi, Regional Director of Health and Human Services, will be leading this along with Dr. Mark Ryan and Jill Hankin of the Virginia Poverty Law Center. This is going to be held at the General Assembly Building, Senate Room B, 910 Capitol Street, right here in Richmond. Remember that you'll be able to listen to this show over and over and over at indiemedialive.blogspot.com, or you can catch it tomorrow afternoon from 2:30 until 3 o'clock here on WRIR.org, streaming on the web. Paul Gunter is the director of the Reactor Oversight Project for Beyond Nuclear, beyondnuclear.org. He has been working against nuclear energy and on behalf of clean energy since 1976, when he was one of the original members of the Clamshell Alliance. I met Paul about 10 years ago as he began to mentor our local group, the People's Alliance for Clean Energy, which is a chapter of the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League, in our efforts to stop Virginia Dominion Power's plan to build two new nuclear reactors down at North Anna. According to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, we in Richmond are in the impact zone of those two reactors. That means that we are within a 50-mile radius. These reactors were built in 1978, but they have been recommissioned now until the year 2040. And we have a lot of information for you today because what is happening in Japan really sheds a light on what could happen at North Anna. Welcome, Paul. I know that you are so busy, but I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today. The Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plants were hit hard by the March 11th Great Tohoku earthquake and tsunami, and their cooling systems were wrecked by the massive natural disaster that devastated northeastern Japan. First of all, can you bring us up to speed this morning on the latest with those six reactors?
Well, Rebecca, thanks again for having us on your show. We really appreciate this opportunity to speak directly to affected communities around nuclear power plants in the U.S. Right now, our concern is focused on the fact that right now we have very serious problems at 1, 2, 3, and 4. It appears that units 5 and 6 have been stabilized for the moment, and it is now a tug of war to try to stabilize particularly Unit 4, which was a very large inventory of exceptionally hot and radioactive irradiated fuel stored on the roof in this pool outside of containment that has been identified as losing all cooling water at one point and then being refilled and then losing again. And these fires are breaking out off and on. There's been a hydrogen explosion in that unit as well. So now we have hydrogen explosions that have occurred in units one, which was the first one, and then unit that was a rooftop explosion of vented hydrogen gas from melting fuel inside the reactor core. We have unit two also had a partial core meltdown, and there was hydrogen gas generated in when the fuel lost cooling. The efforts to vent that hydrogen gas and pressure were unsuccessful initially by Tokyo Electric Power Company workers, so Unit 2 had an internal explosion inside containment that we believe has damaged the containment structure itself. So that's very significant. We have a Unit 3 had this, again, a partial core melt after the loss of cooling. The venting of the hydrogen gas and along with radioactivity went up to the upper section of the reactor building, but outside containment, and detonated up there in the most dramatic explosion yet, which I think people will never forget.
Paul, for those of us who are lay people, could you get very basic with this for us? I know that when I realized that there is no magic in fissioning the atom, there is, you know, radioactivity, there is heat, but there's no magic for creating energy in the atom, that these reactors make the electricity by boiling water, which turns into steam, which turns the turbines, that creates the electricity. Can you help us understand how we are cutting butter with a buzzsaw here?
Well, you know, there are two basic designs, particularly here in the United States, for nuclear power plants. There are the boiling water reactors, such as the General Electric Mark I, that is, under this extreme severe accident scenario in Fukushima Daiichi, And the boiling water reactor, basically, as it says, the reactor has a fuel, an enriched uranium core that is in a controlled reaction during normal operation, generating extreme amounts of heat and radiation. The heat is allowed to boil water in the reactor vessel itself. The steam is then dried and then driven through a main steam line to a turbogenerator in the turbine building, which is outside of containment. And then that steam generates the electricity. The same steam line then condenses that water and then drives it back as water into the reactor where it's reboiled. So this is essentially a closed-loop system that drives steam from the reactor to the turbine and then condenser and back to the reactor. The pressurized water reactor, much like like North Anna there in Mineral, Virginia, is a in this case the reactor pressure vessel is where the reactor core sits. Generates tremendous amount of pressure on the water inside the vessel. Upwards of 2,000 pounds per square inch. And so at that pressure, water will not boil, but you can heat it well beyond the boiling temperature. So North Anna's water temperatures are upwards of 600 degrees Fahrenheit under extreme pressure rather than the 212 degree Fahrenheit for boiling. And then that pressurized, superheated water is then driven into a steam generator, as it's called, which is inside containment. And then a set of pipes coming from the turbine generator system go in for an exchange of the heat between the reactor through these thin wall pipes and the steam generator and then back to the turbine. So there's two loops in that system, and then you have this third loop coming in from Lake Anna from the condenser that then takes the heat on this second loop, and you are able to drive the water back into the steam generator, and then the excess heat goes back out into Lake Anna without direct contact from the reactor core. But there are leaks all along the way. These systems do develop leaks, so there is always concern that there has to be constant vigilance that pinhole leaks, cracks in the various piping systems don't allow radioactivity to escape into the environment as gas or as particulate. And eventually it wind up in the atmosphere or in Lake Anna, but I think the comparison of a chainsaw cutting butter or a cannon ringing a doorbell has to do with the very low rate of efficiency for turning the heat into electricity. So about 33% of the heat generated in the fissioning of the nuclear core actually goes into turning steam into electricity. The other 67% of that tremendous amount of heat is basically discharged into Lake Anna. So that's why you have a very hot end of the lake that's more like a hot tub than it is a lake. So you can get temperatures up around 100 degrees Fahrenheit in the northern part of Lake Anna. So that's the that's a very rough picture of what's going on.
Paul, I know that the designs of the reactors at Lake Anna have built into them planned releases, regular releases of radioactive gas and water. Could you tell us about that?
Well, all nuclear power plants, of course, generate tremendous amounts of radioactivity in a host of different ways. There are these noble gases like radioactive krypton, radioactive xenon. There are a host of varieties of radioactivity from the alpha, like plutonium, alpha emitter, like plutonium, and then there's the gamma emitters, and there's the beta emitters, and they all have varying degrees of penetration power and can cause a variety of damage to, particularly to living cells, but they can also change the material conditions of metal or concrete by the radioactive bombardment. So, you know, over the course of operation, these various kinds of radioactivity build up in the reactor, not only in the reactor vessel itself, but they will escape through leaks or valves, you know, that are both inadvertent, accidental, or deliberate releases. These releases can occur within the containment building, so you routinely will get purges and ventings of radioactivity from North Anna into the atmosphere. These are classified as very low-level emissions, but they constitute routine and cumulative emissions that then can bioaccumulate in the downwind in plants and trees and animals and water and people and these are all regulated under by code of federal regulation. And they're classified as permissible exposures to people. There's always questions about, what type of how vigilant we are the authorities are being for these invisible releases that you cannot taste or feel or sense or see but they do represent this ongoing routine release, and then there are these releases that are likewise, again, categorized as minuscule but routine that are going on into the liquid effluent coming out of the reactor, and those are being discharged into Lake Anna. And again, these are permissible releases, but they are ongoing, routine, bioaccumulating. They can biomagnify from algae to fish to people. And then there are these accidental releases that are occurring. They can be puffs or out of the containment or out of a vent, or they can be accidental with a crack in a steam pipe that then contaminates systems downstream, and then it gets out into the air or into the water. But these are, basically all part of this ongoing exposure. Even under normal operations, there will be these routine releases and there will be these accidental releases. And what we're most concerned about, of course, is the most vulnerable populations, and what kind of vigilance a protective standard has on that population as opposed to the more robust male population. But, we're always concerned about, what event, human error, mechanical failure, natural disaster, national crisis, could precipitate the next nuclear accident to have a new name, another name rather than Fukushima.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Indie Media Live on WRIR. We're having a conversation with Paul Gunter, director of the Reactor Oversight Project for Beyond Nuclear, beyondnuclear.org. Paul, Dr. Helen Caldicott is very clear about the fact that there are no safe levels of radiation exposure. Could you talk to that point?
You know, the clinical evidence is that every little bit of radiation that you get raises your risk of a number of different maladies and diseases, genetic impacts, birth defects. These are all clinically identified. So that's why you have to report when you sell your home, what the radon levels are in your basement and in your house. This is a right to know for the disclosure of the radiation hazards that just come naturally to us. If you stand out in the sun too long, you will have a risk, particularly some people being more vulnerable to types of skin cancer caused by exposure. The same is true for man-made radiation. These little incremental exposures that can be chronic, that can be cumulative, begin to incrementally raise the level of risk with each and every exposure. This is why there's particular concern for the contamination of groundwater and drinking water as plant systems age and release radioactivity, not only from accidental releases, but there are large releases of radioactive tritium, which is radioactive hydrogen, that are being released into Lake Anna. Often the issue of tritium exposure is trivialized by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the nuclear industry as no big deal, but it is radioactive hydrogen. It constitutes radioactive water, and it then adds to this cumulative ongoing dose that will linger in the water and in the food chain, and the half-life of tritium is a little over 12 years, so every release that comes out of North Anna will have effective half-life, posing a hazard for 120 years. You effectively multiply the half-life by 10 to associate the biological hazard. So, we remain concerned that there should be more focus on the routine radioactive releases that are coming from the plant that are based on, by and large, economic considerations to the operations of the facility. These radioactive releases, particularly the tritium releases, are governed by a policy called as low as reasonably achievable, or ALARA. The ALARA standard, if you read it, clearly accommodates the economic consideration to the nuclear utility, because regulating tritium, which is by and large the biggest volume of low-level radioactive waste coming out of nuclear power plants, it would just be prohibitively expensive to regulate. So these discharges are routine, and they go into rivers and lakes or the ocean, and they are associated with this trivialization of exposure. But the clinical evidence is that tritium is, in fact, a carcinogen. It is, in fact, it can cause birth defects. It will, in fact, cause genetic mutation. in clinical tests. And it is while it is a low energy emitter, that does not equate it to be not of any concern. In fact, it's a short range emitter, which means that if it can incorporate in the hydrogen molecular structure of DNA, it will replace the hydrogen atom in the DNA because it is radioactive hydrogen. And there is when it can do its close range damage.
In the last couple of minutes that we have, Paul, I want to talk about the fact that the nuclear industry is providing about 20% of America's energy pie right now, and that 20% could be made up by conservation and energy efficiency measures.
Yes, clearly we have a choice for a 21st century energy policy that is primarily focused on energy efficiency and conservation and renewable energy like solar and wind. It is time to move away from the mistakes of fossil fuel and fissile fuel like uranium power and coal to an energy policy that harvests the sun, harvests the wind, and then makes the most efficient use of that electricity through energy-efficient refrigeration, air conditioning, motors, pumps at the residential, commercial, and industrial level. You can simply understand that we now have the technological capability to dramatically reduce our consumption of electricity while improving our lifestyles, and we can then begin to power a hybrid energy policy without fuel cycles that require the mining of coal and the mining of uranium. Really what we need to understand that to be truly energy independent, we cannot rely on uranium from Kazakhstan or Niger Africa or even Canada. We should be looking to the sun that shines in our backyard, the wind that blows, and linking all these sources together. We now have the opportunity to make that shift. I mean, recognize that Google Corporation has just made a $5 billion investment to link offshore wind from Virginia to Delaware with offshore transmission line linking all kinds of offshore wind farms to bring Virginia power that it needs on the order of gigawatts.
Paul Gunter, Director of the Reactor Oversight Project for Beyond Nuclear, thank you so much for taking the time for being with us today.
Thank you.
And I'm going to put in my 2 cents worth now real quickly. Because these nuclear accidents are happening on the other side of the planet, do you feel unaffected? Well, maybe you shouldn't. Zoom out and see our home, the Earth, as the blue marble suspended in the blackness of space, and you'll realize that we live in a self-contained environment. What happens anywhere eventually touches everywhere. I would like to thank Tim, my engineer, and all the other wonderful volunteers at WRIR who make Indie Media Live possible. Until next week, be kind to yourselves, be kind to the animals, be kind to the planet, but don't be silent, because silence is the voice of complicity. We wish you peace.